This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This morning we've got double trouble. We've got two guests in the studio, and we're going to refocus our attention instead of a lot of the details of technology. We're going to talk about acquiring technology and managing the whole process of acquiring the technology that you use every single day. Today in the studio we have two people, and the first person is Dwight Gibbs. He is the CEO of a company called Contractor. And he also has with him Scott Keough, who's the president of Contractor, the kind of the big dogs of a little company. Is that right, boys?
That's right.
A lot of people are involved in technology, and I normally talk about, you know, managing mobile devices or SharePoint or Red Hat or a little topic like this, but I thought we'd maybe refocus today and talk about, well, what about acquiring Red Hat? What about acquiring a mobile device management solution? How does that go? And what's the best practices for acquiring different types of solutions for federal people? And that's why we have you in the studio. Let's start off with your background, Dwight. How'd you wind up working for this company and founding it?
So my background, I'm a techie by training. I got a bachelor's in finance and MIS and a master's in MIS from UVA. I wrote software for a small consulting firm while I toured in a band for 7 years.
That qualifies you.
Absolutely. In addition to being the drummer, I was also the road manager, so I had to order all the gear we needed to tour. So that's where I got my first exposure to procurement of technology and other gear. The band broke up. I went back to Georgetown where I met Scott in the MBA program. And while I was there, I started a company called The Motley Fool. We were one of the first dot-coms, and I was the CTO there for 7 years, then went on to work for the CTO at Capital One, and then I was CTO at Legg Mason and a couple other companies.
A lot of finance background. A lot of business solutions.
Finance and technology. That's
Motley Fool is well known. It's interesting that in your background, you talk about a finance education organization. I think that's interesting that you use education in there. And most people would think of selling or marketing, but education, that's interesting.
Our tagline is educate, amuse, and enrich. And
so if you're a federal IT professional and you're trying to figure out how to manage RFPs or manage contracts, sounds like some of the advice you have might be practical.
I certainly hope
that. It is.
Yeah. It might actually be relevant.
Wow. He's a guy with an MBA, and he's successfully started other companies. He's got a solution here for my listeners. Scott, my typical listener gets to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. He or she beats their head against the wall. About noon, they want to jump out the basement window because they're pushed and pulled in all these directions. You got security mandates. You got to move to the cloud. You got to reduce your budget. Oh, by the way, your staff is being pulled back. I'm not even mentioning what's happened the last couple months in town here. And that's just like icing on the cake for these listeners. So tell us about your background and how you can bring some of your knowledge to help my listeners.
Well, sure. So after I met Dwight at Georgetown, I went to my first startup, actually, which is called Potomac Interactive. And we did custom design and build websites. And we ended up productizing one of our clients' websites into really a prototype for a cloud service. And we enabled small businesses to update and edit their own content on their websites. From there, I went to MicroStrategy. I was in enterprise product management, so I learned a ton about enterprise product development and the release of those products and bringing them into the marketplace. I spent some time there in the channel organizations as well, making sure that the channel was well-fed and that our products were distributed properly. I spent 6.5 years actually at GTSI, which is a medium-sized reseller, so I know all about the reseller world and what that means and how they support our government agencies. And then finally, the last 4.5 years, I was at Booz Allen Hamilton supporting the Census Bureau. I helped support the 2010 decennial effort, which is the largest peacetime mobilization of government resources every time it comes around. And I actually also was pretty heavily involved in developing a cloud strategy for the Census Bureau and helping them actually implement that. So all of those pieces of experiences, John, have all kind of come together.
It's like the perfect storm. You two together, perfect storm. You know, in boxing, they tell you the left hook sets up the right cross. And this is, I got both. I got the left hook here, the right cross. So we have good financial background, we good strategic and knowledge of the industry, which is federal procurement here.
Yeah.
And so we know you both have expertise in finance and in the federal government acquisition. So let's paint the picture. And this is not a very pretty picture at all. You know, a lot of people are challenged in just managing the acquisition process. Even if my company sells something to the federal government, I'm calling them every 2 months saying, what's the stage? Where are we now? When's this going to happen? Who gets approval? What happens now? And it must be, people in procurement must be going crazy, huh?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of it's manual process. A lot of our agencies are using spreadsheets and email and talking to each other on the phone or meeting face to face. It's very difficult when you talk about these very large programs and lots of spend and very complex technology. It is extremely difficult to stay on top of that and get the right people looking at the right steps along the procurement process to make sure that they're getting what they want. They're ordering what they want. What they've ordered actually shows up. They are actually paying for what they've ordered. All of that, if it's done manually or if it's done with spreadsheets and other means, it's very, very difficult. It's easy to make a mistake.
Dwight, I left the gym last night at 9 o'clock, had to pick up stuff on the way home from my wife. You get a pound of potatoes, you put it in your car, you take off. That's pretty simple. So that acquisition is pretty simple. In the world of cloud computing and some of the acquisition that takes place now, I mean, you get multiple quotes, but they're very, very complex multiple quotes, and you have to track them and understand them. And then even if you do award something, are you getting exactly what you receive? So this is a challenge my listeners have, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But there's actually an overarching challenge that the federal workforce is facing, and that is the brain drain that we're seeing a lot of really experienced procurement professionals saying, you know what, sequester, shut down, pay freezes, I'm out. We're seeing a lot of very senior people actually leave government. So the emphasis on cost cutting and cost control is heightened. So the work is expanding, yet the number of people is decreasing because a lot of these folks are not getting backfilled. So we're seeing the workload on these procurement professionals increasing dramatically, as is the focus on their work, which is almost the perfect storm. And then, as you pointed out, John, the complexity of, is this going to be my data center? Is it going to be a private cloud, a public cloud? How do I actually put this solution together? It is a daunting task.
And Scott, the issue is pretty simple. If you go to the store last night, I bought some potatoes. Suppose I also bought some rice. And I go to my car and I go, well, I just have the potatoes here. They didn't include the rice. I didn't get what I paid for. Now, let's take that and multiply it by about a million times with federal procurement and acquisition. Well, did they get what they got? Did they get what they paid for? And by the way, everyone's putting their eye on the federal government. Well, you're overspending this, you're overspending on that, but you have to be careful about what you do spend, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in my times at GTSI, I saw this firsthand. You get these quotes that were 200-400 lines long.
Whoa.
You know, and they're major acquisitions for all the hardware and all the software and all the storage that an agency needed for their data center upgrade, all the networking gear. And to go through a 300-line quote manually and to confirm that this is actually what you wanted in the quote, that's a huge opportunity for mistakes. And it's also just a very, very time-consuming process.
And understanding the words, too. For example, Dwight, you see something, premium maintenance. Okay, 6 months later, you get a bill for premium maintenance. Is it valid? Is it not valid?
Oh,
how do you know?
And a lot of it, you know, it's often not 6 months. It's a year or two or three later. And the people who procured that maintenance contract or that equipment are long gone. And the question is, well, do we pay this? And, you know, I used to... When I worked at Capital One, we had the concept of a CLM versus an RPE. CLM is a career-limiting move. If you make a mistake, it can limit your career. And if your CLM is big enough, it's a resume-producing event, an RPE. And if you don't pay for support on a production system and it goes down, you can be facing an RPE. So it's not a trivial thing to try to manage the support contracts for these large technical infrastructure projects.
And everyone has to work together kind of in a scrum, to use an agile software method, or like a football team. And everyone, the acquisition folks, have to understand what's going on in the field as well. I mean, this is a typical problem that comes up.
Yeah, that's right. You've got a number of different stakeholders that all have to collaborate to execute on an acquisition. You've got folks, obviously, in the contracting shop. You've got folks in program management. You have the IT specialists who really understand the technology better than anyone else. And you've got the senior executives and the program management leadership who really has to pay attention to the budget and how the technology fits into the overall architecture of that particular agency. So all of those people across the board during the entire acquisition process have some contribution to make. And it's you've got to have some kind of a solution that enables all of those folks to collaborate efficiently.
And get their feedback. Well, we ordered red, we got green. Well, when a complex cloud system is going to be much more difficult than that, but could be that simple.
That's right. And where are the workflows and where are the points and the decision points in that process?
Well, I think we set up the problem pretty well. Let's take a break, come back. Let's go into specifics next. Specific questions about what my listeners can handle. What happens if they get an invoice? How can they match it with a product? How about returning bad products? How about taking a complex contract and just trying to manage it through the whole acquisition cycle? You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dwight Gibbs, CEO, and Scott Keough, who is the president of Contracker. Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dwight Gibbs, who is the CEO, and Scott Keough, who is the president of a company called Contracker. If you want more information, you can go to Contracker, Contracker.com. Get more information, find out about their backgrounds, their illustrious backgrounds. And then, Scott, your background includes a lot of interacting with federal agencies. I mean, a lot of different agencies, a lot of different applications. This acquisition process, give me a typical scenario of the acquisition process, then we'll bounce to Dwight and see how his solution improves that process.
Sure. So in a typical acquisition process, way up front, the manufacturers themselves, of course, are involved, whether it's HP or Cisco or Red Hat or you name it. And they're talking to their government customers, and they're helping shape opinions and getting feedback from the government. Once the acquisition process moves along, the value-add resellers and the solution providers and the consultants contribute as well. You get to the point where you've got the government has a good idea of what they want. They've got their requirements fairly well defined, and they put together that RFQ, and they send that out for bid. And once that happens, they start getting quotes back. And it's really much of it, from based on my experience anyway, is a manual process. And to be clear, John, these are the acquisition folks and other government professionals. They are very smart people. They are very hardworking people. They are diligent in spending the government's money. And they want to do the right thing, no doubt about that. But it's hard work when it's a manual process, and they're dealing with spreadsheets and physical meetings and emailing ideas and acceptances around.
And this is not just the federal government. I was in an organization downtown D.C. They owned the old building. Walked in there, and they were managing 500 PhDs. And I said, "How do you keep track of the PhDs?" And she pulled out a three-ring notebook and she papered through it. And I said, "Well, what if you lose that?"
Right.
This is serious. So, Dwight, what's the better mousetrap? What's the answer to this situation?
Oh, we may be a little biased, but we think Contracker actually
that's the answer.
Is the solution, of course. So I've had about 2 decades of experience as CIO or CTO, and I've had to deal with procurement in a variety of different organizations. And, a year and a half ago, I decided, you know what, I'm going to fix this procurement challenge. And so we've put together a software as a service system that we think really greases the skids for the procurement process and makes it much, much easier. So we handle everything electronically in spreadsheets, but manage electronically. We allow our clients to easily compare different quotes, to compare quotes to each other and to the initial RFQ. We allow them to easily cut POs, to compare POs to invoices and to packing lists. So the question is always, this is what I agreed to pay for. Am I getting invoiced the same amount? And am I getting this gear? And that was always a hard question to answer. And we have a solution that we think allows our clients to answer that much more easily.
So this would be under the category of cloud services and software as a service. Is that right?
That is correct.
So it's secure and scalable, so people can start off small and expand, and it gives you much more control than your existing situation.
Absolutely. And all you need is a browser to access it. No need for purchasing hardware, software, nothing in the data center. Much easier than actually trying to run a physical installation.
So we have inconsistencies. We mentioned those. And I told the silly story about buying potatoes and rice, didn't get the rice. Well, that's easy. inconsistent invoice with what you buy. What about quotes over time? I bought a car last December, and I emailed one dealership. Is that your best price? And I emailed another one. That's your best price? And they hated me after about a week. But I got a real good price. And what what happens is quotes change over time.
Absolutely.
Another problem to manage.
Well, and that's why we track every version of every document that comes in the system. And we track all the emails referring to those documents. So you have a really good history of, hey, how did this change? And what exactly happened? Particularly when it's, you know, 10 months down the road, you've got an invoice and you're thinking, wait, did we agree to pay for this? I don't think that's the right price. It's all there and searchable.
And Scott, the problem is, what if the guy before you, Pete Fenarki, left and you walk into the situation and you get an invoice and you go, well, what PO do I apply this to? And Pete Fenarki's gone somewhere. I mean, this is a challenge right today, isn't it?
That's right. If all the documents are on Pete's desktop and he left and that desktop's been re-imaged, that information is gone forever. And you got to have some kind of repository. And ideally, that repository is a database and all of that information is interlinked.
Dwight, tell me about premium maintenance and why this is a pretty hot topic with many acquisition professionals out there.
So I have a pet theory that every large technology manufacturer sends out platinum maintenance for everything they've sold for the last 7 years, and they just see what comes back. Because why not?
I'll send Scott an invoice for cutting his lawn, and he may pay it.
Who knows? But the record keeping is so hit or miss that some people pay the platinum maintenance because they think, gosh, you know, if we have a problem, we got to be able to fix it. And oh, by the way, if you knew this is in a QA lab somewhere, and oh, by the way, it was purchased 5 years ago, it's fully depreciated. You probably don't need platinum maintenance on that, but most people can't track down those records.
And that's public sector and commercial.
Oh, it's
both. That's across the board. That's everyone, large, small, public, private.
So Dwight, I just get you a job at a unnamed agency, and you're working in acquisition, and this invoice comes in your desk, and so you can renew it, you can upgrade it, you could bounce. I mean, there's not just one way to handle this. Crazy invoice for premium maintenance, is there?
Oh, no. It's so you could say, you know, I want maintenance, but I'm going to go, no, I don't need platinum. I need gold. This is in a QA lab. We'll get next business day. That's fine. But if it's a production system, you may want that platinum maintenance. The key is finding out, you know, when did you buy it? What's it doing?
You know, Scott, many of my listeners work for agencies that can't predict what's going to happen in 6 months. FEMA. I mean, I had a guy in here 2 weeks ago who lived in a FEMA trailer in New Orleans and started a tech company. and so they can't predict what's going to happen. And so all of a sudden, you're arranging things, responding to a crisis situation. 3 months later, you walk in your office, and how do you organize all this mess?
Yeah, you got to kind of pick up where you left off after 3 months. And you've got to, again, you've got to have all that, you've got to have memory somewhere. You've got persistent information somewhere so that people can pick up and start up where they left off 3 months ago. And you've got to have all that organized.
We talked about mobile device management. That would be asset management. Where is this phone? What privileges does it have? So this isn't asset management, isn't it? It's management of a process. This is more business process management.
Correct. It is a business process management for the acquisition process. In terms of asset management, that's the next logical step. So we would export data from our system into an asset management system.
And if it's cloud-based and standards-based, this export, as long as it's interoperable, meets the accreditation standard, should be pretty simple.
Oh, it is relatively straightforward. It's just a question of what are you using for an asset management system? What format do you need? All right, here we go.
I look at my last 52 shows all the time. I see who listens to what. A popular topic is agile software development. I mean, who knew? When it comes to agile software development, Scott, I would imagine that this is something that people say, well, I want to use agile software development, which is rapid changes. Can you reflect that in your acquisition process, or how does that work?
Well, yeah, I mean, during the acquisition process, new information comes up all the time. You're making real-time decisions all the time. So I think if I'm hearing your question right, the acquisition process itself mimics the agile software development process. And you need to have a flexible service, a cloud service, to help you make those right decisions at the right time during the acquisition process.
And one of the phrases you often hear with agile development is inspect and adapt. And just change the process as you need to. And since, as a matter of fact, we're developing our product using agile methods, Scrum, with some XP mixed in. And it is about being flexible and being responsive and being able to, if a client says, hey, we need you to change this way, and within 2 weeks, we're generally able to accommodate them because the process does change. It has to, based on the acquisition.
I work for a very small software company, and we happen to be in some pretty big accounts. We were in a little account called Sikorsky, And they were trying to solve a problem. We offered a solution. We said, well, you're like a multi-million-dollar company. You have this big Oracle contract. Why don't you have them do it? And they said, Oracle doesn't want to be bothered. Yeah. Then you got this IBM stuff all over. Why don't you call? They wouldn't come out here unless we had a $5 million P. They wouldn't even talk to us unless it was $5 million. And so I think just large organizations, whether federal or commercial, have this problem of managing situations that are very important to a lot of people. And the bigger companies are going to go, nah, sorry, your problem.
And you're absolutely right. And I don't want to say inflexible and intransigent, but I will. but no, you find a lot of the larger companies can't get out of their own way. And they want to be nimble. They want to be responsive. But there's just so much bureaucracy, they can't.
Yeah, and it's true with IBM. I mean, I was once at an event, and I walked up to a woman, started talking to her. She worked for IBM. And I said, how long have you been working with this agency? She said, 30 years. What? 30 years? I mean, there's a lot of intransigence. I think if you just look what's happened in technology in the last 5 years, I don't know how to adapt. It's tough.
Yeah, the struggle with the big providers and the big vendors out there is they just can't adapt very quickly. So Agile works in a number of different ways, not only in the acquisition management process, but also you get much more Agile, smaller firms coming in and providing solutions and support. You drive that kind of culture in the government agencies as well.
Let's take a break, and we come back, talk more about challenges in the acquisition process and some possible solutions. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Scott Keough and Dwight Gibbs from Contractor. Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Scott Keough and Dwight Gibbs, and they both are founders of a company called Contractor. You can get more information at Contractor. Is that right?
That is correct.
Contractor. The Spanish speakers out there may have trouble with it, but you won't have trouble with it because it's easy to find. Get more information about the company. We're not talking about a tech topic now. We're talking about a related tech topic, acquisition of technology, and some of the challenges that my listeners face in just acquiring technology and managing the whole process. There are blogs written about this, and I'll write a blog about this interview. You can go to Google, type in John Gilroy blog, and you'll find my blog. It's called the Tech Tuesday blog. Scott, any blogs that you read, anything of interest for my listeners to keep up with the trends in acquisition?
Yeah, well, there are a couple of interesting ones out there. There's one called Spend Matters, which is a pretty broad one, but it's very broad in terms of commercial versus public sector versus big versus small. It kind of covers all those topics. And there's another one that's more tailored. They're just starting up called Public Sector Spend, and it's an affiliate subsection of Spend Matters. But both of those blogs have really good content.
What's the URL? It's a .org.com. What is it again?
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, well, they can
one.
Probably type that in and find it, you know.
Public Spend Forum is the second one.
Public Spend Forum. That's interesting. Yeah, I think. You know, many of my listeners acquire information by listening. Some go to blogs. Some are involved in Twitter. I like conferences. I'm a big fan of face-to-face. And, you know, 15 people, 15 ways to get information. We try to provide it every way possible. Maybe even skywriting. I guess there's some people respond to that. Maybe at the beach. So, Dwight, let's talk about a phrase that's used in my world called rip and replace. What do you mean? You come and rip and replace my existing city? I'm not going to use the kitchen for the next 2 weeks. You know, you rip and no, I don't want to rip and replace. Can you do it in one day? I just had some carpeting put in the house. Did it in one day. And they guess what? They ripped and replaced the old carpeting. What about software and ripping and replacing? So if someone switches to your system, how can that integrate?
It's actually relatively simple. We have it's software as a service. So all you need is a browser to access the system. We do data migrations relatively easily. And the nice thing about our solution is we're not trying to hold data hostage. And you see that in some other service providers. We give our clients easy access to their data. If they want to download it every night, they can. Hypothetically, if anyone wanted to rip and replace us, it would be pretty straightforward for them, though they would never find anything as good as ours, of course, I humbly assert.
And we've got integrations, too, with financial packages and other key applications that are in the acquisition management workflow.
So tell me about APIs. Maybe you can define APIs for our listeners, or some listeners who know it in circles. Some people are kind of fuzzy about them. And where's the role of an API fit in with your product?
Sure. You're talking about application programming interfaces. These are ways, tools that software uses to access other software applications. We use web services for all of our integrations. So whether it's Salesforce, QuickBooks, Concur, Deltek, Dynamics, I know I'm forgetting some, we integrate through a series of web services. So it makes it relatively straightforward and easy to integrate with other applications to transfer data back and forth.
So the idea is if you're working at DOI at Interior and the mandate is you have to use Solomon, well, that's fine. You can take and use Solomon and then use an API to go through your system as well.
Absolutely.
Good. Systems integration is important. So in my world, we use this phrase CapEx, OpEx, CapEx, blah, 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 blah. It sounds like something. Oh, CapEx is writing a check for something and you own it, and operating expenses is renting it or leasing it, and there's different business applications for both. So how can an agency look at their acquisition and reduce capital expenses?
Well, this is, you know, the contractor is part of a very large shift in thinking on that topic. You know, CapEx is a three-year budgeting process. You know, the first year, the agency figures out what it is they want to spend. The second year, it wins its way through Congress and actually gets passed as a law. And it's only the third year, as your listeners know, that the agencies actually get to spend that money. So 3 years have gone by. 3 years of technology evolution, 3 years of changes in the agency.
That's like 10,000 years, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, before they actually get to spend. With OpEx, it's the agencies, in many cases, not all cases, but they have much more flexibility and discretion in how they use that money. And it's much easier for them to turn that on and turn that off. And they're redirecting, we're finding, OpEx that's dedicated to traditional maintenance payments, for example, to cloud services to make it much more flexible for them to.
Now, Dwight, I teach a class and I tell my students, well, if you're going to start a company, use OPM. What's that? Other people's money. Yeah, I mean, that's the way to do it. Why risk your money when you can use other people's money? Now, what about from the perspective of a federal IT professional working for the government? Can any of these charges be transferred on to the contractors themselves? So how does that work?
So, yeah, they can set up however they wish. If they've got a vehicle they want to use, it's relatively straightforward to work with a VAR or another solution provider to work with a system. So it's extremely flexible. So however they would like to pay for it, they can certainly pay for it.
So you could tell a vendor, well vendor A, I would like to acquire your product or service. However, I would like to work within the confines of the system that contractor has because it helps save me time and money. Would that be an approach that someone could use?
Yeah, that's right. In federal PMOs, you've got contractors and federal government employees working hand in hand to manage large programs. And it's often the contractor who is helping making those decisions, or at least pulling all that information together and preparing the information and supporting the acquisition for the government decision makers to actually make those decisions. So contractor can be used by contractors and service providers to support government PMOs and acquisitions.
So contractor.com for more information. You know, I've never made a mistake in my life, Dwight. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And I'm sure none of my listeners have ever made any mistakes. And you know, I mean, you know, let's face it, part about five things I do, I, you know, transpose a number, make a mistake, and errors are part of the acquisition process. And so I think paper-based errors seem to be a lot more insidious than other types of errors, but how does this reduce errors with acquisition?
Absolutely. So one of the things we do is we scan any of the documents that don't come in a machine-readable format. So if they've got an invoice that comes in, they've got a packing list that comes in, we'll do the OCR, the optical character recognition, to get that data in the database so that we can actually compare and see, hey, you know, the price you agreed to pay in your purchase order isn't the same as the price that's appearing in this invoice. Or guess what? They said that you agreed that you wanted to buy 400 of these widgets. According to the packing list, you've only got 350. So, and this is, and right now people are doing the stare and compare where they're putting this, looking at the thing side by side. But as Scott mentioned early in the program, now 400 line purchase order, 500 line purchase order, it's hard to do that.
Right,
but much easier to have a computer do it for you.
And John, you joked about, you know, not being perfect. Nobody's perfect, of course. People aren't perfect and agencies aren't perfect. They do their best, of course, to screen vendors and get the best solution they can. They do that up front through things like, hey, let me see your quality assurance surveillance program, or hey, let me see, we're going to define these service level agreements with you, the contractor, to make sure that you're hitting all those milestones and those performance expectations all along. And all of that oftentimes is up front in some kind of large solicitation process or an RFP. But what happens is once the contractor is actually on board performing these PMO services, let's say, and supporting an acquisition process, it's all after the fact. If the government agency makes a bad selection and puts in someone at a low, low price who just simply can't live up to those expectations, who can't live up to those SLAs, it's really too late. What the government really benefits from is, frankly, social media and the ability to look into anonymous ratings up front and get a very, very broad perspective from lots of different people rating these contractors before the government agency actually makes a commitment to them.
It's almost like a Consumer Reports for a service or an organization kind of reflect.
It's a good way to put that.
It's called QASP, is that the phrase?
A QASP.
A QASP, huh? And that, and I'm familiar with SLAs, especially for cloud services, and so they both work together, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So if someone makes a claim about an SLA and they don't perform to that level, you have to go back, but if you go back, it's, you know, you've already suffered through the bad service. It takes time. And if your agency is trying to reduce cost, this doesn't reduce cost. It increases cost.
It's very hard to back out of that contract. That's exactly right. So providers make assertions. And in most cases, they're well-intended. But they make assertions all the time about, yeah, we can support those SLAs. And yeah, we've got a solid QASP in place. But what a government agency could really benefit from is, let's see real data. You know, it's anonymous. We're not going to point out and pick and choose any particular provider and getting one really in a spotlight. But you've got a lot of rich data here that's available through social media and in rankings of performance.
We'll have to take a break and come back. We'll talk more about challenges in the acquisition process and some possible solutions. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Scott Keough and Dwight Gibbs from Contractor. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dwight Gibbs and Scott Keough. They are executives at a company called Contractor. For more information, Contractor. And what they do is they work with organizations to help them improve the process for managing acquisition, managing purchase orders, everything from RFQs, packing lists, support contract, RMA manager as well. That's part of your program. Is that right, Dwight?
It is indeed.
Wow, RMAs. I keep thinking of buying toner and having bad toner and trying to send it back with an RMA or some silly thing like this. I mean, this silly thing can be a multi-million-dollar problem, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing is it's extremely manual, and it's also important because when you send returns back, you want to make sure you either get that replacement gear or you get the credit memo. And if you don't track that, you're going to be losing out on that PO.
Pay for something you didn't get.
Back
to the old buying the rice and the potatoes at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my listeners are involved in social media, blogs, and tweets. My handle is at Ray Gilray. And does your company have one? Or Scott, do you have one?
So I don't have one. Contractor has one.
Yeah, which is somewhat dormant. I haven't been posting on it. I post on my own, which is at Dwight G.
At Dwight G. So follow him and get the latest scoop on all kinds of acquisition challenges. Well, gentlemen, this is a time in the show where we put your feet to the fire and we ask you 10 questions to see if you're a card-carrying nerd. We're going to go with you, Scott. If I go to your house this afternoon, how many desktops do you have in your house here, Scott?
So we have 0 desktops. We have 3 laptops.
Oh, that's positive.
And if you include an additional work one, I'd bump that up to 4.
And here's a new question. How many cell phones have you bought in the last year, Scott?
So just one.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do not.
Okay.
Am I failing this, John?
Well, I don't know. Do you have a personal blog?
I'm writing it now.
That's a no. Come on now. Online personal backup services? You use any of them?
I use the one that Contractor is using, so I intermingle personal with business.
Half
a point.
Come on. You're not a nerd at all. What kind of smartphone do you have?
Android.
Okay. Some points there. And the number of apps you've used in the last month?
10.
10? That's okay. If we're going to your house this afternoon, how many tablets will be floating around your house?
We've got 2.
2. And what social networking sites are you active in?
I use both. I use Facebook and LinkedIn.
Country and Western, both
country
kinds of music.
Exactly right. That's funny.
And the last book you read was paper
I'm
electronic.
Gonna fail. What do you think, John?
I don't know. You tell me.
Paper.
Well, the nerd scale is not real high on this one. Dwight, yours to steal this one, I'm afraid.
Hey,
you can
I'm the
whoop
sales
him pretty
guy.
Bad.
I look good, though.
Okay, we go from eye candy to the brain power here. How many desktops do you have in your house there, Dwight?
So I've got one PC that dual boots Windows 7 and Ubuntu. I've got a Mac desktop, 2 MacBook Pros.
Just saying the word Ubuntu
I'm
gives
going
you points.
Down hard.
That is, you get points for that.
And,
okay.
And the recent acquisition is a Chromebook, actually, which is pretty cool.
Number of cell phones you've purchased in the last year?
3.
3, you see? That's what real nerds do. They get sick in 2 months. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
At Dwight G.
Okay. Do you have a personal blog?
Now I use Facebook and Twitter as my blog. I know. It's terrible.
Do you have any online personal backup?
Oh, yeah. Dropbox. And I also use G Drive and SkyDrive.
Getting a lot of points here. Poor Scott's crying in the corner over there. What kind of smartphone do you have?
It's an Apple iOS.
Okay. And how many apps have you used in the last 30 days?
Used probably 15 to 20.
15. And how many tablet devices do you have floating around your house?
2 iPads, a Kindle, 2 iTouches.
And what social networking sites are you active in?
Twitter and Facebook and occasionally LinkedIn.
And last book read was paper or electronic?
Electronic, bringing down the house.
Well, I'm afraid you're the card-carrying nerd here. We're going to give you a pocket protector and a slide rule, and you can impress all your friends.
More for my collection. Excellent.
tell your kids what a slide rule is, and they'll start laughing immediately. Guarantee you that much.
Fine, I'll take that point, but I've got better ski equipment than he does.
Well, that goes a whole different category. Mm-hmm. That goes into athletic and scholar and all kinds of different categories. Well, Scott, we've joked a little bit. Now we got to turn serious here and talk about the future of the federal government acquisition. Do you think the federal government is going to stick with traditional programs, maybe paper-based, spreadsheet, streaming notebooks, maybe binders and proprietary software are going to move to the cloud? Is this really a practical approach?
I think they're going to move to the cloud. And inevitably, you're going to see vertical integration. So you're going to have agency. The stack's going to look like this. You've got agency, prime contractor, subcontractors, and then below that, the suppliers and the manufacturers and the distributors. There's going to be a whole ecosystem. In the ideal world, all of those layers in that vertical stack will be integrated. So they won't be emailing back and forth. They won't be passing paper back and forth. They'll all be using the same online application delivered as a cloud service, and it'll be far more efficient.
Dwight, this sounds like business process management, but in some ways it sounds like a real large SharePoint installation. I'm sure there's people using SharePoint for that, and some people talk about document retention, document control. Where's the difference, and where's this world all heading?
So BPM, actually one of our local companies here, Appian, is a large BPM provider. BPM,
Michael Beckley, we know them all
absolutely.
Four.
Absolutely. But BPM can be used for anything. It is business process management. It's a toolkit. With which you can orchestrate any process. So it could be employee onboarding. It could be financial reporting. It could be employee offboarding. It could be procurement. It could be anything. But most of the BPM providers provide a toolkit, and then they have some standard workflows that they include. So that's one thing. You have Documentum and a variety of...
Like SharePoint with something. Yeah,
SharePoint.
Documents.
And a lot of these are focused on document management, which is one part of the process. One of the issues that I think you find in the procurement space is there are a variety of different systems, and trying to get them to work together is very, very difficult. And they're almost their own, piles of data that you've got to move, documents from one to the other. And BPM can be used to manage to move it around, but there's a lot of build it yourself and a lot of work required to make it function for the organization.
Yeah, there are agencies who've sunk substantial dollars into SharePoint solutions, and they wind up with a proprietary situation with unusual methods of storing data. How's that for a discrete
That was
phrase?
Incredibly diplomatic.
Is there a stronger word than unusual and proprietary? I just say distinctive ways of storing data and unusual ways to import and export data that may tie the hands of the next vendor. And maybe that's intentional. I don't know.
The word I usually use is, gosh, that's interesting. That's just fascinating and a very novel way to accomplish that.
Yeah, it is. So is this an open source solution? Is this proprietary, or what kind of solution do you have?
So we are proprietary. We're built in C# on the Microsoft Azure cloud. So it is not something that we're releasing freely, though we do use several open source tools and when we use an open source tool, I will say that we contribute financially back to the maintainer. So it is a mix of open and closed.
So Scott, the service can be small, medium, and large. You can start off with a test program and then ramp it up from there, or how does a typical acquisition work?
Absolutely. In fact, we've got a pilot program that we could subscribe customers to right now, and it's all volume based, the pricing. So someone can come in, a customer can come in with a very low volume of purchasing and spend a commensurate low amount of money on Contractor until they get used to the service, until they conclude that yes, it is really something that's valuable to them, and they can ramp as they need to. So we can really start at a very small level and grow from there.
And so this is the answer to the question about scalability. So you got a great system, but you know, I'll test it with this project. But what happens when something comes up like FEMA and we blow up? I mean, is it scalable?
It is scalable. And we've designed from the get-go for integration and scalability. And that's one of the reasons we operate on the cloud. I never want to be in a situation where I say, oh my goodness, we've got too much success. Quick, bring in 20 more servers. Now, I want to be able to just turn those on right now when we need them, because the client should not suffer for our success.
Scott, are you going to participate in events? Are you going to any conferences here where listeners can maybe take a look at you, speak to you, or should they just go to your website? Or what's a good way to contact you?
So we're looking at that the calendar right now. There's one coming up in December with nonprofits that we're going to take a close look at. There are U.S. Chamber of Commerce events that happen all the time. The best thing to do is just contact me directly. It's scott@contractor.com.
Yeah, and it's contractor, and the website there. I think there's a case study there, isn't there? I was at the website this morning. I wasn't sure.
It's not a case study, but it's kind of a day in the life. And we've got a couple of things that are on my to-do list to add to the site.
Well, you know, if you're spending all your time with code, that's good. The cobbler's kids don't have any shoes. I mean, that's the dilemma. You know, in my world, I work with 20 software developers, and our website, I can't get a name change. It takes me 6 months to get a name change, because they're billing. They say, John, hey, have you heard this before? This is billing time for me, John. Hit the road.
Preach it, Reverend Gilroy. Preach it. Yeah.
I want them to be billing. It's like, you know, I want them to be billing, but I want them to do my work, and I don't know how to induce them. Maybe a free lunch or something will get them to do some of my work for me. That's the problem we all have. Well, we've had a bit of overview of the problems involved in acquisition with the federal government and some possible solutions. If you want more information, you can talk to Dwight or Scott and get some more details maybe at the next event that they attend. You've been listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests, Scott Keough and Dwight Gibbs, from a company called Contractor.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.